RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark Delight Podcast with
Martin Luther Frank Monday, Val, and
Bean. You know, it's funny. I think Gigi was saying, Will was telling me on Facebook that if Martin Luther King were alive today, he would have been canceled.
Yeah. Well, especially with the way that he loved the ladies, too.
Wow.
Very, very toxically masculine.
Bummer.
Yeah. Milk. It's milk day. I don't, it used to be a pretty special day for me, well, not for me personally, but like around here or when we were in school. It was just one of those things, especially coming out of Christmas. You didn't have any holidays to look forward to for a while. I mean, Valentine's Day, you get to bring cards in for everybody for the class and chocolate and stuff until that stopped because of allergies. And then you have Martin Luther King Day, which is like, okay, well, I guess we can do this. And it was always like nice because he represented something that was that provoked change. And he said things that we could really get down with and all that stuff. But the more I grew and I learned about everything in society, you start realizing it's just they have co-opted his name and his image, and it's not right. Nothing about this is right. Like the marriage of MLK with all the NFL programming over the weekend was just, it didn't, nothing. I mean, you're talking about a group of people who are so obnoxious with their lust for power. It's just not right. Then of course you start learning the difference between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And Malcolm X is, it's so much more worthy of emulating, if you ask me.
I know it's crazy. A lot of people hear that and they have a negative, visceral reaction to Malcolm X. But read.
That's all you got to read. You know, it's not necessarily a guy who had a great love and trust of white people. And I'm not going to try to convince somebody not to have the grievances they have. But as far as solutions goes, he's right on as far as voluntarism goes and independence. And when you talk about liberation movements, that is so much more what's going on. Whereas Martin Luther King was fodder for a forced integration movement, which is, you know, forcing people's hands has only left us with the resentment culture that we have today. Whereas Malcolm X was talking about, hey, look at us in the 60s, black people in the 60s, black Americans in the 60s, how many billions of dollars they control in the marketplace. Let's put that to work for ourselves. Let's build up our own mini economies and our own.
I don't think anybody could argue with that either.
No.
Good for them.
And it'd be amazing because, you know, when you start doing that, you start teaching people what they can do for themselves. Then all of a sudden you have everybody, black, white, brown, beginning to work together on voluntary basis of mutual benefit. And when you have people starting off with each other in that respect, on acting from a place where you want every transaction to be mutually beneficial and not something that is forced and compelled by the hand of a higher power, it's so much better for relations, for understanding what motivates people to get rid of real prejudices. It's truly amazing. But this also shows you how insane it is, the victim mentality, how it drives people to get in bed with the real enemy throughout the ages. Like, why do Native American political groups, by and large, drift toward leftism and big government when big government has been their problem since the beginning? Why the same with race special interest groups? It's always been government. So today has become a lot less magical than it was in 1993.
I got a video yesterday from Gigi, who we had recorded something when we were back in 2014. at her house. And it was a video of the two of us talking about this event that we were planning called Save Long Island. And it was about all these issues. And the issues that we were naming off are like all of the issues that we're dealing with today, including some of the ones that you just mentioned. And I'm like, holy crap, this could just as well have been an event today.
Yeah.
And we could have put the same damn commercial out today.
I don't doubt it. I really don't doubt it, because nothing has really changed.
Other than the amount of people involved.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I have a guest that I'm bringing on tonight that I was trying to find some really cool ways of talking to about the police state. And this is a guest that back in 2005 put out a video that I think has become a 1-2 punch as far as red pill awakenings go for many people out there. And it all had to do with 9/11 and especially the police state that came out of it. And since then, really, what has changed in the last 20 years other than the antagonists and a little bit more of the tools that are used? For example, what came out of the Patriot Act and the antagonists that were framed as the reasons why we need it have now been shifted to us over here domestically. It's not Al Qaeda, it's the PTA. So when you talk about the things that you were doing in 2014 and how it really could have been applied to multiple eras, it's true. Like the story really doesn't change. The problems don't change. They put different faces on the problems. And
we were talking about Common Core, which is basically what CRT has become.
Yep.
We were talking about Big Pharma, which today would have much more of a following, obviously, than it did then. We were talking about genetically modified food. We were talking about nullification. I'm like, holy moly. And it was funny as hell because the two of us probably were about 50 pounds heavier.
Well,
it was hysterical. And like Gigi starts it off and she's like, here, have a chocolate. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to diet. I'm like, eh, no.
have some GMO Hershey's. Now let's talk about Monsanto.
No, these were actually not GMO. Gigi, of all the people that I know, she's one of the biggest reasons why I even got involved in doing all these things the way I do them now, as it were. And she was always very big about organic food and fresh ingredients and chocolate, and everything was like, you know, always fresh. And that was back when it was a lot harder to get that stuff because a lot of people weren't really into it. I had a little joke that I was going to play when you said toxic masculinity. So I want to play that. And then I want to get into what Youngkin has done in his first day in office, because I'm stunned. Are you stunned?
I think when I saw these executive orders, I said, wow, all right. Because, you know, the day of everybody, there's always people out there that want to temper your enthusiasm, yep, and curb your enthusiasm about one reason or another. And whereas I always thought that what Virginians showed us on election night last year was really amazing. There was a loud contingent of people that are like, he's a member of the Carlyle group. Whatever. I said, okay. I'm not going to deny one thing or another, but hey, this is,
let's
see what he does. And these 12 or so, what are you, 12?
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to skip the joke. Screw it. Let me just pull that up. And it's funny because the media is now saying that, you know, he fooled everybody in Virginia into thinking that he was a, quote, mainstream Republican. That's their thing. We thought he was a mainstream Republican. The Democrats that voted for him thought he was a mainstream Republican, but he's not.
Mainstream.
He's an extremist.
Oh, who the hell would nobody want mainstream? Oh, that is nonsense.
Yeah, who wants that's mainstream nonsense. Republicans?
Like nobody wants Republicans or Democrats anymore. Nobody. So especially mainstream. That's ridiculous. I had the list. Oh, you do? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Here it is. I have it too. So.
Okay. So he banned mask mandates in public schools. He ended CRT. He rescinded the vaccine mandate for state employees. He ordered Loudoun County to be investigated. That's the one the one with the serial rapist. He signed an order to combat human trafficking. He promptly removed the diversity, equity, and inclusion section of the Virginia governor's website.
Fantastic.
The AG dissolved that entire division.
Love it.
And this on the heels of a poll that says that there was going into 2022, apparently a 9%, you know, a plus 9 Democrat sort of fervor across the country that has now been lost to the tune of plus 5 R, which would mean 15 point swing, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Or 14 point swing from plus 9 to negative 5. Let's bring back our math. So what else did he do? Because I don't think that's the full list. There's more, isn't there?
Let me get to it. Here we go. So I had, it's not in the order that read it.
Just read them off again. We'll hear them again. They're beautiful.
All right. Banned the use of CRT and other inherently divisive concepts in school. Executive order 1. Number 2 was the mask mandate. 3, terminated the entire parole board of the Commonwealth of Virginia. All were Democrat appointees. Initiated an investigation in Loudoun County. Executive 4. Executive order 5 established the position of chief transformation officer to review all government agencies, beginning with the Department of Motor Vehicles and Virginia Employment Commission. Declared Virginia open for business and initiated a new review of burdensome COVID regulations. Established a commission to prevent human trafficking and provide support for survivors. Established a commission to combat anti-Semitism. Withdrew from the regional greenhouse gas initiative. Directed all executive branch entities to reduce job-killing regulations by at least 25%. Rescinded the vaccine mandate for all state employees. And what's this? Here's a quote. Meanwhile, new Attorney General Jason Miralles, who was also just sworn in, has terminated the entire civil rights division of the AG's office. Many of them were Soros-backed lawyers. That was a mass firing within the few months of being sworn in. The mainstream media are calling it insane and mean.
Mean.
AG Miralles also warned all county prosecutors he will be pursuing charges for crimes they refuse to file charges for themselves. This is a warning to local VA DAs not to do what the New York DA is doing.
You know, it's crazy because we had an article way back in the day that focused solely on Virginia and George Soros and how he maneuvered the elections there for those positions. I'm going to post it in the show notes again today because Daniel Babinski and I worked on that together. That was some column and it bore out to be true. And now we're seeing the reversal. And I got to be honest, I don't think those moms, those Democrat moms that voted for Youngkin are sitting there like, oh, boo.
No way. No, I mean, maybe some of them would be like, why with the greenhouse gas? But they just don't know how stupid that is.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're going to feel better in just a very short while here. In
yeah,
well,
not only that, but take your children off into the valley and plant some saplings.
Right.
You're worried about carbon dioxide? Plant some saplings. Make Virginia greener.
You know, I went out this weekend. I wanted to get like a little lamp for my night table so that like at nighttime I could have a little like soft, comfortable light next to me. And I got this beautiful glass, like handcrafted lamp. It was really not expensive at all. And when I got up to the counter, the woman there said, hey, you know, would you like one of our sustainable bags? And of course I'm like, oh geez, sustainable bag. But it was a really pretty little tote bag that I can use for other stuff. So I got it. And she's like, every time someone buys one of these bags, we donate money to the arborist something, something, and we plant trees. And I said, great. Why would you be against that? Plant more trees. We need them. That's beautiful. I like nature. Like there, you don't have to be against nature to be a Republican. I think that people just have it all wrong. Why wouldn't we want to preserve the environment? I think
no, you're right. You're right. It's another one of those things that I talked about for a lot too. There needs to be a recapturing of the conservation movement. Conservationism is conservatism.
Yes.
I mean, there's nothing it's so ridiculous to think that people who believe that the land should be managed by free individuals and not managed by government is somehow going to turn it into a concrete wasteland.
Look at what they do just take this pothole mitigation efforts, okay? When the government doesn't get to it because they never do, independent citizens go out and buy their own supplies and fill those potholes faster than you could blink your eye. They do it together as a community. It happens all over the country all the time. I know it's not the same thing as conservationism, but the free market, when there's a problem, it solves it very quickly because nobody wants the problem, you see. And most people agree on what the problems are. We've just been conditioned to think that we don't. Free market is always better. It's always better.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, didn't the EPA turn the Colorado River yellow not too long ago? I mean, to think that you're going to get anything good. Oh, you know who another person you should listen to? Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton talked about complex systems and how government and centralized top-down movements to try to manage complex systems, whether it be the complex system of the human body or the complex system of a national park, it always fails incredibly in just incredible ways. And it's mostly due to human hubris, and the rest is just because there's a lot of money in claiming that you are the only ones that could be the stewards of the earth. And the only way that you can do that is if many people give you trillions of dollars. Like every one of these stupid commercials that you hear, end racism, yeah, the pursuit for equity and blah, 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 the environment, this and that. What it all comes down to is, please, if you want to see the world better, vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, God, do people believe this shit still?
Well, speaking of changes that are going on all over the place right now, I saw this on Citizen Free Press this morning, and I figured it'd be good to kind of weave in. More colleges are working to rec another semester for healthy students at virtually no risk from COVID-19. Triple vaxxed healthy 18-year-olds, while I would argue they're not healthy anymore, have to wear N95s or double mask and test twice weekly at Johns Hopkins University. No eating together in dining halls, all for $75,000 a year. And underneath, there's a study. Enrollment at U.S. colleges and universities is on track to fall by another nearly 500,000 undergraduate students this fall, continuing the historic drops that began with the start of the scandemic. Enrollment is down by 7% or almost 1.1 million students. The unintended consequences, Frank, that they have caused with their tyranny, i.e. homeschooling, i.e. realizing what education is in higher learning institutions across the country, what it is really, and then having young adults take the time to figure out what they want to do with themselves, or for goodness sakes, join a trade, a skilled trade, something we have very little of left in this country. We need skilled trade workers. That means not just, you know, that means project managers for construction sites. It means plumbers, electricians. How many people do you know how to wire an outlet anymore?
Yeah, not many.
And who's going to school to learn it?
Well, that's the best part about it. You don't even have to. You can, especially if you can go and get in touch with people locally and become an apprentice.
Right.
These are professions that never required school. I mean, you can go to, there are plenty of technical schools that are out there to help with, to help people on their way to mechanical work and whatever, if you're going to work in a shop on cars or simple motors, whatever the hell it is. But when it comes to electricians and plumbing, become an apprentice somewhere.
It's a huge opportunity and they're in such short supply, just like with truck drivers, Frank, same thing. Like this nation is starving for truck drivers right now, starving so much so that I've seen articles where high school kids are starting to learn to drive trucks, because they don't have anybody to do this job anymore for several different reasons. And the ones who are doing it are just being like overtaxed and treated unfairly. And that's a big part of what's going on in this country right now with supply. It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue. So the unintended trickle down consequences that are going to take some time to manifest, in my opinion, like we're not going to see how many kids are not going to be sitting there with a gender studies degree anymore, living with their parents for 15 years because they can't get a job. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And my plan for my kids has always been and will continue to be to have them pick, after they graduate, four different fields that they think they would enjoy as a career. get a, you know, internships or part-time jobs or apprenticeships, whatever, in those four different fields, decide which one they want to settle down with for the rest of their damn life. And then if they want to go to school, because going to school when you're 17 and 18 years old is the biggest waste, in my opinion, of money, unless you are so sure of what you want to do with yourself when you get older that you have no question in your mind. It just doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah, no. And there's other caveats to that as well, as you're getting to. The number one, you're 100% right. I will blockade Aurora from going to any kind of a college if the whole idea there is, well, I just want to go figure it out.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't put yourself into hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt to go figure it out, figure something out. You go to a college with an aim. What are you doing? If you want to become if your calling is to become a brain surgeon, you want to be a neurosurgeon, you are going to need to go to specialty schools. There's no way around it. You can't start an apprenticeship with a local brain surgeon.
That's what I'm saying. Know. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but other than that, even most of the things that people go to school for these days, everything I went to school for, I didn't need to. Now, in retrospect, I'm glad I did because I met a lot of lifelong friends and I also spent the first times on radio that I always wanted to do. And it became the impetus for everything I do today. Now, that I could have found my way onto this path in life in numerous ways. So you can't say, well, I have to do this because someone else found really great friends. You can find friends anywhere. I just don't regret anything I've done. The debt wasn't that nice, but still
paying my college loan. Shit.
Yeah, I know it's, but still the real point here is that everything else that I was doing, my minor in history and my major in business management, I did not have to go to statistics class. Yep. And to entrepreneurship 101. And when I got out of college and we started opening up our studio and we opened up our first studio and I opened up our first business account to open up our first lines of business credit, I did not apply anything that I learned in those classrooms. I forgot it all. You go to City Hall, you start doing business at, you're doing everything on the fly. You go to LegalZoom, you start an LLC. I mean, you just do things. If you wanted to, you figure it out. So I would say that 90% of the things that people go to school for, you can just start fiddling with if you actually know what you want to do.
There is a benefit to, like, for example, when I left, I had a major in philosophy and a double minor in English and history because I wanted to be an attorney. And I figured that this would be the best way for me to get a roundabout way of thinking in philosophy and then learning history and obviously English to be able to write. But I got very sick when I was in college and I ended up having to take a semester or two off. And then I looked back at my curriculum when I was 18, almost 19 years old and said, why am I in archaeology class and like algebra one? And like, I'm not learning anything in these 2 years of school almost that I've been through that will help me apply anything in the real world. I changed my mind. I wanted to go to school to become a systems administrator instead. And I went to trade school and in like 16 months, I graduated with a 4.0 and I started working while all my friends were still in their third and fourth year of college, I was already in my career, quote, right? Mm. So like, but there are things that my friends went to college for that did sort like the ones who wanted to be doctors or the ones who wanted to be psychologists or you know what I mean? So there is a benefit to it if you have a targeted reason for why you are there and you're using your excitement about your field to learn. Because a lot of people don't have any excitement about their field or don't have any clue what they want to do. And when I was in college, I remember waking up one day and saying, I think I want to be an author and calling my mom and dad and saying, I want to change everything and I want to be a writer instead. Well, whoop-de-doo, here I am. But they were like, no, you're spending tens of thousands of dollars just for your reason that you said before. So yeah, highly skilled stuff, things you need lots of education for, like doctors and all that. Yes. But we have a very severe shortage of all the other things in this country. And I think that the COVID nonsense has been a catalyst for people to realize this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know if you read this. It's a wonderful article. Let me see here. It was posted on Zero Hedge on the 13th. It was written by Charles Hugh Smith, of the Two Minds blog, and the headline is "The Real Revolution is Underway, but Nobody Recognizes It."
No,
and
I
didn't. It's unbelievable. It's not that long. You want to go through it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, listen to this. Revolutions have funny characteristic. They're unpredictable. The general assumption is that revolutions are political. The revolution for the revolution some foresee in the U.S. is the classic armed insurrection or a coup or the fragmentation of the nation as states or regions declare their independence from the federal government. By focusing on the compelling drama of political upheaval, we're missing the real revolution, which is social and economic, the Great Resignation, a global movement which in the U.S. has largely largely unrecognized American characteristics. The Great Resignation is a real revolution which few, if any, recognize. The status quo is going to great lengths to dismiss it. For example, the Great Resignation, the historical data and deeper analysis shows it's not a great as screaming headlines suggest, but this revolution is not controllable with force and therefore unstoppable. So what is it? The sources of the revolution are in plain sight. You rig the economy to enrich an already rich top 10%. And supersize the already bloated wealth of the top 0.1%. And then you wonder why the bottom 90% are indebted, broke, burnt out, and disgruntled. The hubris of the ruling elites and their lackeys is off the scale, as the structural exploitation is presumed not just acceptable, but delighted to the bottom 90%. Alternatively, the more cynical view of the top looking down is they have to work at the wages we pay in human they have to work at the wages we pay in inhuman conditions because they have to. All the debt serfs and tax donkeys must accept our pay and conditions or starve. This is the neoliberal neo-feudalism with the kid gloves of PR removed. Secondly, it's rather obvious what happens to public protests against systematic or systemic exploitation and disempowerment of the bottom 90%. They go nowhere. Anyone remember Occupy Wall Street? Mm-hmm. This is the fate of any quasi-political movement, the co-option, suppression, etc., and the benign neglect as the full court press eventually wears out the peasants. Now, here's the big point here. The real revolution takes place out of the spotlight as one person at a time opts out of the system. They opt out of the unwinnable rat race of burnout, of debt serfdom, of powerlessness, of accepting exploitative work conditions and the tiresome trappings of neo-feudalism. After 45 years of losing power, the workforce finally has a bit of leverage. Some of the leverage resulted from demographics. The baby boom generation is retiring en masse, and so the workforce is shrinking. And from the revolution of opting out, as millions of individuals quit, creating a labor shortage like anything in living memory. As millions of workers opt out of conventional employment exploitation, individuals have leverage due to the labor shortage to reverse the game employers have been winning for 45 years. Corporate America dropped the pretense of rewarding loyalty long ago, and nobody believes the corporate PR about we're a family unless corporate America is referring to an abusive, dysfunctional family. Here's the depiction of the typical corporate workplace, a torture room where the overlords are obsessed with bogus feedback from employees and customers. American workers are awakening to the reality that the only way out is to get out. Stop playing the rigged game and start playing the players. Workers are now in a position to quit and demand better pay and conditions and then quit again to gain more and quit again. The employers are gnashing their teeth at this loss of power. But what happens in revolutions, the pendulum swings from one extreme to the opposite extreme. Workers are realizing that they are powerless to change the rigged system in the ballot box or by conventional means. The only freedom is that still available to quit and game the system to the hill, to the hilt, or drop out in the informal economy. A great many workers are done dealing with abusive American public who seem to feel like they have a right to abuse employees. Those quitting give conventional reason for obfuscating the revolution. And what is the revolution? It's statistically what it's showing here is that why workers are seeking new jobs in 2022. They're finding a job more so, close to 50%. They're finding jobs that they're more passionate about. Poor working conditions at current job is another reason why they're leaving. They're seeking better pay and benefits. They want to continue working remotely. So they want to start their own business is another one. Over 25% are doing that.
Yep.
And then to the lesser concerns, children, COVID, avoiding vax mandates, all that stuff. So what has really been happening is people realizing that the pickings have been slim and they're being sized out. They are they're being forced to, number one, cut so much of their overhead to see how little they can survive on. And then from there, they're just saying, you know what? If this is going to be the fate of the world, then I'm going to find something I'm passionate about. I'm going to start my own business and I'm going to start servicing smaller micro economies.
Yep. Yep.
And this is the real thing that's going on, that it's not being really articulated that very well. We are an example of stuff. We know many people who have done that over the last 2 years, writing books, really throwing themselves into their coffee companies and starting clothing companies.
Shoot, look at Blue Monster Prep.
I know. It's incredible. So there are things like this going on that people need to understand. And it goes even to what we open up the show with today with Malcolm X. How do you use the money that we have to be able to create breakaway economies? They may not be as large and regulated top down, but who the hell needs that? Because this bloated wealth allocation nonsense is not what people need to be happy. You know, that's what we're realizing.
I really like what's going on here with this. And you're absolutely right, because they can't find workers. Like, if you need a job right now and you really want a job, they're hiring at places where you typically get, you know, less than minimum wage, and they're begging for people. It's almost double that, because they can't get anybody to, people don't want to work and put themselves in conditions like where they're treated crap. I have a thing from a Gen Z person who just figured out taxation for the first time, and she gets it, and then she realizes that she gets it and she stops.
If somebody has $500 and they've already paid taxes on it and they give it to me, so now just because it goes from them to me, I also have to pay taxes on it, even though they just did.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but anytime I spend one of those $500, I'm going to also pay another tax fee on whatever item I'm buying. And then whoever I bought the item from will have to pay taxes on the money they just earned from what I bought. So, every single dollar, if a dollar is 100 cents, hold on.
Now she gets all embarrassed, because she's like,
just forget it.
Forget it. Forget it. But you just realized how much of the dollar's left for you.
Well, I'll wait until she learns about how dollars are created. But wait until she learns about fractional reserve lending.
Right.
Wait until she learns that she can take that 100 cents, put it into her bank account, and then the bank can loan out 10, nine that don't exist because she put one in.
Yep.
Wait until she learns about what the inheritance tax is and why it's destroyed and created the greatest wealth transfer from small family farms and ranches into the hands of government and people like Bill Gates. Wait until she hears about the death tax and what kind of thievery that is. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The only reason why children lean left is because from the moment that they enter the cradle, they have been told that any solutions to the right of Karl Marx is obscene and evil. They haven't been allowed to even contemplate what kind of hell they vote for and they think is altruistic in spirit. It's only when they have these cold water to the face revelations like this girl has that they start realizing there's no sense to this. And it's really death. It's death of everything, especially the human spirit and ambition.
Yeah.
It's death.
Well, it's funny because I mean, Viv is applying for jobs now because she's 16. She wants to work. I said, absolutely. And we were talking about whatever salary she might get and how much money she'd take home and what she could do with that money. Could you pay her cell phone bill? Could you pay for a car payment? Could you pay for insurance? You know, all that stuff. And then I said, well, that's all before taxes. And she goes, well, how much do they take out in taxes? And I said, probably, I don't know, 30%. She goes, what? I said, oh, yeah, 30% of your money, if not a little less, goes right to the government. Congrats, you're an adult. She goes, oh, my God. That's crazy. I said, I know, isn't it? You worked all those hours and guess who's getting a little piece of it?
Well, yeah. Think about that. You hold that up against what your work year has been And when some people are working, when you take the state and the federal taxes and then all those taxes that are all over the place. I mean, she just mentioned sales tax. She hasn't conceptualized where money comes from and how inflation is a tax in itself. Well, because you're taking away the buying power of a dollar just off the top.
Yep.
By inflating how much of the dollar is in circulation for no good reason. So when you think about that, it is quite possible that many people in the country work 12 months out of the year, and the first 5 months
are free.
Is free labor that they did that everything that they earned was stolen.
Yeah. So if they're going to do that, they might as well be doing something they're happy with. Right.
Yeah.
And then there's the push, obviously, to stop people from owning anything ever and have them all as debt slaves to rent or whatever. You know, there have been people talking about the whole, scam of property ownership for a long, long, long time. I'm not going to get into all of that. And so like everything's changing. And I think, again, trickle down effect of where we're at today and the ever encroaching, you know, veil of tyranny. However, there was a shock poll that came out over the weekend. 55% of Democrats want to fine unvaccinated people. 59% want to confine you to your home. 48% want you to be fined or imprisoned for even questioning vaccine efficacy. 45% want you forced into designated facilities. 46% want you digitally tracked. And 29% want to take your children.
Yep.
And
these are not even the good Germans. These are just the Nazi true believers.
Well, it leads me to the next part, which is what they're doing to Joe Rogan right now. Do you know what they're doing to Joe Rogan right now?
Like what? In what, like, in particular?
270 doctors, in quotes, have called out Joe Rogan with this letter saying how he is promoting dangerous misinformation that could actually get people killed.
I heard Dana White's response to it,
which was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, and wow. They found 200 doctors in the United States.
Nope. Because guess what? Only 5% of them are actually doctors. The rest of them are not. There are 50 PhD academics, which are not doctors, medical, 60 college professors, 29 nurses, 10 students, 4 medical residents, and a handful of science podcasters. It's signed by all those people. And then some doctors, I think there's 10 of them on there. And of course, the authors of this letter are not doctors themselves either, but they have ties to far leftist think tanks who, like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Atlantic, and a CNN contributor. So she's being pimped out all over to talk about this dangerous misinformation when the entire premise of their nonsense is grounded on misinformation because they're lying to everybody about who they are.
It's not like they wouldn't be able to actually find 200 leftist moron doctors in the country to actually sign on to it. But they went scraping the bottle of they scraped up science podcasters. And you know what? These are the same people who will say that Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth are a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, those professionals.
Yeah, those professionals are ignore those.
Yeah. And I have the Dana White clip ready. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Proper number 12, Irish whiskey.
Hey, Dana, you mentioned Omicron.
It's Omicron.
When you got sick with COVID, you reached out to Joe Rogan for advice on what to do. I was wondering what your thoughts were with the 200 plus doctors trying to put pressure on Spotify saying that Joe's a menace to.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, how about this? Ever since I came out and said what I did, it's almost impossible now to get monoclonal antibodies. They're like, they're making it so you can't get them. You know, medicine that absolutely works, they're keeping from it. I don't want to get too political and start getting into all this, but ivermectin and monoclonal antibodies have been around for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, you can't dig them up to save your life. The doctors won't give them to you, you know. And even when I did it here in Vegas, which was however many weeks ago that I had it, like right before Christmas, I think, or something, yeah, I made one phone call and was able to get it done. And that's not like some rich, famous guy. Like anybody could have called and you know, because that's what everybody always throws at me. Yeah, of course you can make a phone call and get it. Bullshit. Everybody could have got it back then. You know, Lene had it. Lene did monoclonal antibodies and did all that stuff. Everybody could get it. Now, and you know, Rogan's been talking about it. Then I went crazy talking about it. You can't get those things to save your life now, literally.
Are you surprised at the backlash that people don't even want to allow you to discuss options and pretreatment?
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Yeah, it's one of the craziest things that I've ever witnessed in my life. You know, and we're not talking about experimental drugs or things that you said. This stuff's been around. And the ivermectin, the guy won the Nobel Peace Prize.
So somebody chimes in, you're a doctor?
Oh, yeah, because those are the only people who can infer logical conclusions.
I mean, I would say, are you? That's are you a doctor?
Are you a doctor?
So can we even the playing field then? Are you a doctor? What are you going to say? What are you going to say next? Are you going to say something about the non-efficacy of ivermectin, Mr. Non-Doctor? Are we going to
What about the doctors? The doctors who have all the credentials and more that this guy in the audience seems to think that you need to have to even talk about the issue, that don't agree with the 200 plus so-called doctors that wrote this little missive to Spotify. What about the doctors who don't agree that they're not doctor enough?
No, they're not doctors. They're conspiracy theorists, Frank.
Right.
Right. Let's listen to the rest of what he says, and then we're going to end by talking about Alex Berenson here.
Doctor? Huh?
You're a doctor?
No, but there's plenty of doctors that do.
Here he comes.
I just asked a question. Are you a doctor?
No, but I took them and they both work for me. So why shouldn't I be able to take them again? Or other people?
I won't answer.
No, come on. Dive in.
We do have a
brain. Why shouldn't we be able to take
our own decision?
Right. You want to know what's scary? I bet I could get some f***ing pain pills quicker than I could get monoclonal antibodies. No, not maybe. That's a fact. That's a fact. They f***ing hand out pain pills like they're Tic Tacs.
Nobody said that was right.
Huh?
And nobody said that was right.
No, I hear you.
Shut up. But
you can. Monoclonal antibodies and ivermectin isn't going to do anything to you. Pain pills kill you. Fact. And I'm not a doctor, but that's a fact.
So, this guy...
Ooh, well, yeah, maybe that's debatable. Pull out your facts.
Well, I hate people like that.
Hey, do you have a source for that? Because Sanjay Gupta said the other day that.
So Robert Malone went on Fox on the Ingram Angle, and Alex Berenson was on. Now, Alex Berenson is a former New York Times columnist who wrote a book about COVID, and he tells the truth about 90% or 85% of it, but he says that ivermectin doesn't work for COVID, which is just an absolutely uninformed, ridiculously uninformed opinion. And he also says that Robert Malone is not the inventor of the mRNA vaccines.
Alex said this?
Yes. On Laura Ingraham, he attacked Malone while Malone was also on the show with him. So Robert Malone went kind of nuts about that, and he's been not nuts in like a crazy frantic way, but he's been proving him wrong all weekend, and it just kind of goes to show. Here, I'll play it really quickly. I know we only have a few minutes. Here.
Now the psychotic masses are coming for Joe Rogan for the sin of having Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine platform, on his program. Nearly 300 scientists are demanding that Spotify censor Rogan's podcast, which is the number one in the world. They call Rogan and his guests questioning of vaccines and COVID policies medically and culturally dangerous. And they also claim Spotify, by hosting the podcast, is responsible for a sociological issue of devastating proportions. Joining me now is Dr. Malone, who, of course, was on that podcast with Joe Rogan, and Alex Berenson, author of Pandemia. Dr. Malone, I thought scientists were supposed to ask questions and test assumptions. Now that's being called dangerous misinformation.
Right. In particular, one of the leaders here is Eric Topol. What's important, I'm amazed that the press has picked this up. This is only 270 people, and they're medical writers, nurses, all kinds of people. In contrast, the declaration in the Physicians International Alliance of Physicians and Medical Scientists, which is signed only by physicians and medical scientists, I'm the president of that organization, has over 16,000 signatories. This is a huge kerfuffle over 270 malcontents of mixed origin led by Eric Topol, who is a shill for the administration at this point. This is a non-story that's been
COVID information that we're all learning about day by day.
Here he goes.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Listen, I don't think Dr. Malone does himself or those of us who are trying to raise questions about the vaccines any favors when he refers to himself as the inventor of mRNA technology. That's clearly a large exaggeration. And I don't think he does us any favors when he says that ivermectin has been proven to work. I think that's a huge overstatement of the case.
That's it in a nutshell. But I know we have to end now because we had tech issues in the beginning and you have to leave.
Well, what is he saying in response?
He basically comes back at him and says, come on now. And he names off the patents he has and all the papers he's done. He is the inventor of the mRNA platform in 1989. I did that research way back in the day. He is.
I didn't expect that coming out of Alex Berenson.
I did because he can't get out of his own way a lot of the time. He's really terrible. He's a New York Times writer, Frank. Let's remember the roots and origin.
Okay.
Right. So, well, you have been listening to the Dark Delay podcast with
Friend Monday Morning Val and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Wednesday.
Later.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.